This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. After the murder of George Floyd and the social justice protests that followed, many American corporations announced diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to address racism in the workplace and pledged billions of dollars to address racial disparities across the U.S. But research in the years since has found that very little of the billions of dollars pledged has gone to address the societal problems at the root of the protests in 2020. And corporate chief diversity officers have given mixed reviews to their company's internal efforts. Joining me now to discuss the current state of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and how far we have to go are University of Cincinnati Associate Dean for Inclusive Excellence and Community Partnership, Letitia Bates, PhD. Welcome, Letitia.
Thank you. Welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And Integrity Development Corporation President and CEO Eric Ellis. Thanks for being here, Eric.
Thank you for the invitation.
The University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. I want to ask both of you this question. I'll start with you, Letitia. You know, lots of these big corporations made these big promises and pledges related to DEI in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. What did you think at that time about those promises? What was your reaction when you started hearing about all this?
I thought more of the same, actually. I think we've sort of seen this rodeo before. We are very reactionary, right? And so something happens, and then we pledge to do something, right? The problems that existed before George Floyd are the same ones that exist after his murder. And so I was not surprised at the response because that was the response they had to have. And at the same time, I'm not sure that I felt any more hopeful than I was before the murder of George Floyd.
Mm. What did you think, Eric?
Well, I continue to remain foolishly, maybe naively, hopeful. But I do know the reality of this being sort of a merry-go-round. It feels that way. But I think that we are slowly still moving forward. I was inspired by so many people in all white communities that were protesting and carrying signs, little white children and families saying, Black Lives Matter. And that meant something to me. I really felt like we were getting a big hug from the world and that validates the real challenges that exist out there for us. But organizations are reactionary and not always able to stay the course with some of these kind of promises. So I've seen that rodeo as well.
Yeah. Well, Eric, as you look around locally and nationally, to the extent you've been following these issues, how much do you think has changed in the last 3 years?
Well, a lot changes, and then a lot stays the same. A change takes time, and I think that's the thing. Anybody that thinks they're just going to get in it and do, yeah, it's not going to happen that way. I think too often many of the efforts are performative. They are for... I say if communities had their last $100,000 to spend and they had to determine if they're going to spend it on marketing their city as being open or doing the real work, they'd spend it on marketing. Mm. Because people that don't recognize that inequity is real, they simply don't recognize that. And so they believe that all we need is greater rhetoric around.
What do you think, Letitia? How much do you think has changed over these past 3 years?
I think it depends on how you measure it. We've seen a complete shift in terms of an increase in employability of those of us who are diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners. We've seen almost every company and university hire folks into these roles or expand folks' roles to include those responsibilities. And so in that way, if that is what you're measuring, we've seen an increase, right, in if we want to call those, quote, efforts. And so in that way, some things have changed. But in the ways in which we understand the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners, that hasn't changed, right? These people have been hired, but have they been empowered? We've seen an increase in ERGs, employee resource groups, but how have those groups been supported and empowered to do the work and to create psychologically safe environments for the employees that exist? And so I think, you know, I want to be clear that there have been some changes, but how do we measure if those changes have been effective are much more important to me.
Well, and I've seen research that about these chief diversity officers that many corporations hired or gave bigger roles to over the past 3 years. And I've seen research about they're just exhausted, especially Black chief diversity officers. How much is the weight of this work being put on the shoulders of Black employees who often make up a small part of the workforce, Letitia?
I am exhausted. And I think it, you know, it is a large sort of burden to bear, but one that those of us that accept these roles understand the importance of what's happening, right? Like, I have three children that are going to inhabit this world as working adults. And so part of what I understand my charge is to ensure that when they walk into the workforce, they don't experience as much of or the same of the types of racism, discrimination, and white supremacy that I myself have experienced, right? And so while the work is exhausting and heavy and feels burdensome, it is part of what those of us, some of us who do this work, see as a part of why we are here, right? It is my mission to do this work, and it is really exhausting. I can't express that enough, but also really necessary and rewarding when we're able to make a difference.
What do you think, Erica? Is that fair for corporations to expect their Black employees to take this on and bear so much of this burden?
No, I'd say that that's not fair. But what's interesting is that we've seen recent data that says in the last year, 33% of the chief diversity officers have been cut. Mm-hmm. And that the average tenure of a chief diversity officer is less than 3 years. It's like 2 years. I mean, it's of any C-suite position, it's the lowest. I mean, people are just not choosing to stay in a one-person shop trying to make a difference. And so I think that we've got some ways to go. But my contention is that those of us that do this work feel as though, like, organizations don't care a lot about DEI or DEIB or DEIA. But I would say that they struggle to create people-centered workplaces in general. And I think that we have to make our fight even a broader fight in order to make sure that the issues that we're focused on remain relevant. It is exhausting to be a person of color. And then if you look at the makeup of chief diversity officers, 80% of them are white. I mean, 7% of them are Latinx, 5% are Asian, and 3% are African American. So in the space that we created, in the industry that we created, we still don't occupy much space there even now. So
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the current state of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and how far we have to go with University of Cincinnati Associate Dean for Inclusive Excellence and Community Partnership, Letitia Bates, PhD, and Integrity Development Corporation President and CEO, Eric Ellis. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. We've been talking about the implications for internally for corporations and companies who have focused within. But research done by the Washington Post found that the bulk of the billions of dollars that corporate America promised would be spent, you know, on society and on problems outside their companies that certainly touch their companies, but on making communities better places, most of that was spent in the form of loans or mortgages, often based on where homes were located rather than the race of the home buyers. What do you think are these billions of dollars that were promised to kind of address these racial inequities? You know, what do you think about that?
I think that we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that these things are not just dissipating, but they're under attack, right? And so we see a number of legislative efforts happening to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the first place where people go is they follow the money, right? They follow what corporations are doing with their money to oppose equity initiatives. And so I think this is all just a part of what we see happening. And so while they are dissipating these DEI efforts, we see that the money is not quite going where they said it would go and being used in the way that they said it would be used. Companies are also trying to contend with the fact that they didn't know how to do DEI in the first place. They just did it because they were being reactive. And now they're having to make a choice about, do I still do it? Because now the legislation is coming out that maybe I might not have to. And so I think what we see is people showing us their values, right? And because we live in a capitalist society, I have to respond or my bottom line is going to be hurt. And now I might not have to respond because legislation is coming out that might sort of let me off the hook. And so as we think about where the money is going, how folks have not spent the monies in the way that they have promised to spend the monies, it actually makes complete sense, quote, right? If you think about how people can sort of wiggle their way out of things, and now they are almost getting permission to not continue the DEI efforts as we look at how this legislation is actually attacking diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
Hmm. Eric, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I say all the time that the number, I ask people in almost every training session I ever do, what's the number one diversity issue in the workplace? And it's kind of a trick question. And I love to hear them answer like, it's sexism, it's racism, it's class, yeah. Nope. The number one diversity issue is the one that affects you. And I think that that's what we have to understand. For those of us that have been doing this for me since the inception of the industry, we have had to learn that this has got to be relevant to people. And as people see you fighting for them, they join your team. I say all the time that one of my easiest audiences to work with is a group of self-described good old boys.
Hmm.
Because I know how to fight for them, that oftentimes they are victimized by classism in organizations. And I find that when you fight for people, they join your team. So our work just has to be relevant to as broad, instead of being more narrow. I think that as we get broad, it then opens us up to make progress in our space as well.
Tisha, you talked about legislation. Can you elaborate a little bit on the legislation that you're talking about specifically, what you think it is that's happening either in state houses or at the federal level that is kind of giving the signal to these corporations that they can change gears?
Yeah, I think if we look at what is happening in Florida right now, I have colleagues at universities, at public universities in Florida right now, who are worried because they have diversity or inclusion in their titles, whether they will be able to keep their jobs. I am a sociologist by training, and I have colleagues in Florida who teach about race and class who are worried about if they will be able to continue to teach their courses and not put their university at risk of losing funding. And so if we're not able to teach about or talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, how then do we educate the masses on why this benefits all of us? And I think that that is the central point. I think we also see some generational shifts. Eric and I were just talking mm-hmm. before the segment about how our generations are stronger together and have some different ideas about how to really go about reckoning with these racial issues and injustices, right? And so for my generation and the young folks who are coming, even younger than me, who are coming behind me, we are centering those who are marginalized and we are not willing to stay where we are not valued. And so universities and employers are finding themselves with empty seats and a need to fill those seats. And that is what we are committed to doing. If I'm not centering the voices of marginalized people, people who have been minoritized, I'm not doing my job. And I'm not going to tell someone to stay where they're being mistreated, abused, and further minoritized.
Right. What's interesting is that politicians, in my view, are doing what they are built to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, in other words, if you are a partisan and you only care about your voice, you don't care about the value of perspectives that differ from the one you have. It's the reason why our government is oftentimes so inept, because they don't value this. But it's an overreach. So when you start doing things like taking down the ESG, you know, all of those programs are built to hold organizations accountable to their constituents and the values and interests of their constituents. So all you do is accelerate the pace of change. That's the thing I love about this. You know, it's just like Putin going to Ukraine thinking he's going to take it in a week. Now, look, you've got the war of a lifetime. You never can win. It's an overreach. That's what's happening right now, that people are ignoring government until government starts imposing its will on you. Now you got a fight that you didn't bank on.
Mm. One of the other ways that some of these corporations have spent their money, they've made investments or they've made in deposits at Black-owned banks, but not equity investments in those banks. They've given money to historically Black colleges and universities, but it's steered to specific degree programs or careers that benefit their corporations. Letitia, what are the upsides and the downsides to these approaches?
I don't know, Lucy, that I have very many upsides for you. What I will say is I am a community-based participatory researcher. And I think that that lens is so important because what that means is I don't study communities. I study with communities. And so as these corporations were deciding to give money to various initiatives, Black-owned banks, Black-owned Black universities, historically Black colleges and universities, they should have, the colleges and universities, Black-owned banks, have said, been able to say how they wanted to spend those monies. Part of this, the issue is, you think that you know better than me what I need. How? When you don't live my life or walk in my shoes every day. I think it's this sense of entitlement of knowing, oh, well, STEM is next, so we only have to, science, technology, engineering, and math is on the rise, and so that's where we're going to give the money. We don't know where these historically Black colleges and universities and banks needed money. And we are not a monolith. Black people are not a monolith. And so what Howard University needed might have been quite different than what Bethune-Cookman, for example, which is another HBCU, needed. And so just giving money to these HBCUs, and particularly to our most predominant HBCUs, right, not the ones that are struggling. Nobody was giving money to Morris Brown as they were trying to get their accreditation back. They were giving money to the universities and colleges that were already on a more solid footing, which is a signal in and of itself, right? And so from my lens as a community-based participatory researcher, I don't just give people money and tell them what to do with it. I give them money and I collaborate with them, theoretically, to have them figure out what to do with it. And that didn't happen.
We do have a caller on the line. Leslie, thank you so much for calling. If you could ask your question or make your comment real quickly, we're running out of time. We'd love to hear from you.
You got it, Lucy, Letitia, everybody. Time is precious. I just want to say I love this conversation. I know how important it is. Briefly, I do leadership consulting workshops around the world, and I'm definitely a white woman with privilege, raised in a somewhat racist home, but I married a man who was completely open to being the change and drove me and our sons to be that way. I really think that if we wait for DEI departments and universities and businesses to make the change, it's not going to happen. It really starts with the individual. So much of it is how we're raised at home, and beyond that, it's saying, I'm going to be different. And so I subscribe to, when I hear a comment, I'll say to someone, curious, what made you say that? That may be a little uncomfortable. It sounds like you've got an issue here. If we would just invite each other in more often and have a conversation versus look for what's wrong, I think we'd find how much more we really do have in common.
Thank you, Leslie. Oops, sorry about that. Leslie, Eric, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, thank you for that comment, and thank you for what your family is doing. I think that we have to try to bring about individual change and then institutional change. There's a need for behavioral change and structural change. I think that bias is a human condition, and all of us have bias. And
yes.
So it's I think that sometimes the best thing that I can do is model the behaviors that I want others to see. And then in organizations, I think that we have to try to work on changing the individual behaviors and then the structures within institutions. And it is in their own best interest. That's what we were talking about as well before the show, that doing the right thing is in the best interest of the organization. I don't think that there is a legitimate opponent to effective DEIB. There is none. There's only temporary noisemakers, but this is the only pathway to the future is through valuing unique people in equitable ways, in inclusive ways, and in institutions that create a sense of belonging.
Letitia, you know, we've talked about some of the ways these efforts went wrong in terms of where money was invested, where it wasn't reinvested, the lack of communication with the people who were theoretically receiving these investments. Are these efforts salvageable? And I ask you that big question with only about a minute left. So I'm sorry, a minute or so.
I think absolutely. I think with true collaboration, almost anything is salvageable. And so I think going back to the table and being able to say, you know what, we didn't quite get that right, but we're committed to getting it right. And so now we have more money. And we want to talk to you about how you could best utilize that money. I think almost anything is salvageable with collaboration. And so it is not too late for these corporations to collaborate with these institutions and really be clear about what their commitment is by using their money and their word to substantiate it.
Eric, is that what you tell your clients? I know you work with a lot of businesses.
Yeah, I think that the strategy going forward is it cannot be simply to wait for racist, sexist organizations to change. It really is people of goodwill that want to do the right thing, spending more time collaborating and identifying others that want to bring about change. As we do that, the future is ours.
Well, I'm glad we could end this on such an optimistic note that change is possible and we can turn this around. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Dean for Inclusive Excellence and Community Partnership, Letitia Bates, PhD, and Integrity Development Corporation President and CEO, Eric Ellis. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Derek Smith. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.